Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1940.
Always and always the Goa, the glory, the glory and wonder of you.
This is Edward Arnold, and I welcome you on behalf of the makers of Maxwell House Coffee to another hour of entertainment brought to you each week from Hollywood, and starring Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Connie Boswell, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Tonight's guests of honor are Miss Ann Southern and Mr. William Gargan, stars of the new MGM production, Joe and Ethel Terp, Calls on the President, and our old friend Raymond Walburn. Well, this is the first program of the new year, and I'm full of resolutions. Number one is I've made up my mind to take off a few pounds.
Gee, you can certainly spare them, Eddie.
Who asked you?
Pardon.
Just for that, I'm going to put on a few pounds. I'll need it for my new role anyway.
So where are you going to roll, Eddie?
Now, lout. I'm going to play Diamond Jim Brady.
Again?
Well, what of it? It's my favorite part because all I do is eat for 10 reels. Plenty of retakes, too. Now I regret to inform you, ladies and gentlemen, that Meredith has persuaded me to appear during the opening song, Peace, Brother. Darn you anyway, Meredith.
Oh, gee, Ed, you do it swell. Come on, let's get started.
Well, all right. It can't sound as bad as anyone else does to me.
Well, we'll see.
All right. Now, when my working day is through, I'd want to unlax for an hour or two. Who tells me what I gotta do? Nobody. And when I sits me down for my evening treat, and a sirloin steak would make my meal complete, who tells me what I can or cannot eat? Nobody. Now, when some question to me is referred, and I feel like getting up and making myself heard, who says, brother, don't you say a word? Nobody. And when the Sunday meeting bells ring out, and I want to give that hallelujah shout, who says I can't put that old devil to rout? Eh? Who told me that, eh? Nobody. Not a soul.
All your sins can be forgiven. Please, brother, ain't you glad you're living? Please, brother, up to heaven you'll be driven on that judgment day.
Oh, Eddie, that was really great. You surprised me.
Now, let's forget all about it, please. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet two of the nicest young people in Hollywood, stars of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production of Damon Runyon's grand story, Joe and Ethel Terp, Call on the President. Here they are, Ann Southern and Bill Gott.
Thank you.
And you look positively beautiful tonight, more beautiful than ever.
Oh, dear me, Edward, how does one curtsy over the air?
Make a noise like a bow. Just creak your hips a little, dear.
Ah. Quiet, Turp.
Okay, Twerk. Oh.
No, I really mean it, Ann. Your hair's enchanting. Your eyes are full of sparkle. Your whole being seems to radiate charm and beauty.
Say, can you say one good word for my new mustache?
Now, Bill, we came here this evening to talk about more cultural topics.
That's right. Joe and Ethel Terp calls on the president at your favorite theater next week.
Quiet, Gargan. This is no place to advertise.
No, dear. Don't be crass.
Crass? I'm going to look that up.
Edward, is it true that you've written your autobiography?
Now, Gilda Ann, it's entitled Lorenzo Goes to Hollywood, $3 a copy at all bookstores starting January the 10th.
Don't be crass, Edward. Does that fit, honey?
But honestly, Edward, I can't understand a young man like you writing his autobiography.
Yeah, I thought you have to die before you write one of those things.
Well, it is customary, but I decided to break a precedent.
Oh. Joe and Ethel Terp call on the precedent.
Oh.
What's the book about, Edward?
Well, it's about 300 pages, and the principal topic is me.
Oh.
You mean it hasn't any story?
Well, my publishers describe it as the story of my success.
Gargan, if you say a missed story, I'll scream.
The girl's a mind reader. Can I get a free copy of the book, Ed?
Oh, sure. I'll be glad to autograph one for you, Bill.
If it's not too much trouble, Eddie, I think I'd like to have two.
Why, I'd be delighted. You want to give it to a friend?
No, I've got a bridge table with a short leg.
Oh, I knew I shouldn't have brought him here tonight. I apologize, Edward. But maybe we can make up for it later in the program.
I'm quite sure you will. I'm looking forward to hearing you as Mr. and Mrs. Joe Terp.
Poisonally, I think you'll love Ian Ethel.
Edward, I think you'll be quiet if Connie Boswell sings.
I guarantee it. I love to hear that girl rip off a song. Hiya, Connie.
Hiya, Billy boy.
Connie's starting with a Western tonight. Her own interpretation of I'm an Old Cowhand. Sing it, Connie.
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, but my legs ain't bold and my cheeks ain't tan. I'm a cowboy who never saw a cow, never roped a steer 'cause I don't know how. Show ain't fixing to start in now. Yippee-i-o-ki-yay, yippee-i-o-ki-yay.
Ride, cowboy, ride.
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and I come from Blue Town just to hear the band. I know all the songs that the cowboys know about the big corral where the doggies go. I learn them all on the radio. Yippee-i-o-ki-yay, oh, yippee-i-o-ki-yay.
Ride, cowboy, ride. We never see you rounding up your cattle. You always travel an English saddle, and we've noticed that you never ever try to rope a steer, and we know that the reason is fear.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, we know.
Well, I don't know.
Well, why don't you do it while we're here?
Now, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but my answer is nope, 'cause I ain't got no rope. I'm an old cowhand from Hawaii land, and I long to be where they understand. Every native girl and each native boy strum ukuleles and make with joy. Supper time and it's poi oh poi. Yippee-i-o-ki-yay, oh, yippee-i-o-ki-yay, yippee-i-o.
Fine, Connie, fine. Say, Warren.
Yes, Eddie.
Warren, I have an idea that many of our friends receive new coffee makers for Christmas. And maybe they're wondering whether or not they should change their coffee making technique. What would you advise?
Well, friends, the chances are you should, at least to this extent. When you buy coffee, be sure to ask for the grind of Maxwell House that's exactly right for your new way of making coffee. Because today, with all the different ways of making coffee, unless the coffee you use is ground just right for the way you make it, the full flavor and goodness just can't be extracted, no matter how much you use.
But why is that, Warren?
Well, when you make coffee correctly by the drip method, the water passes through the coffee just once. Now, that means the coffee you use must be ground just fine enough so that all the flavor can be extracted in the one quick contact with the water. And that's just why Maxwell House comes in a special drip grind, a grind you can always trust to give you clear, full-bodied, flavorful coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. On the other hand, if you make coffee in percolator or coffee pot, You know the water comes in contact with your coffee not once, but many times. This means you need the regular grind Maxwell House to stand up in the longer brewing and give you the rich, satisfying coffee you should expect every day. Drip or regular, just ask for the Maxwell House grind that's right for your way of making coffee. We'd like you to discover the extra flavor and economy of perfect coffee, perfectly ground.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. Well, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has a new toy. For Christmas, his boss gave him a powerful short-wave radio set. And Daddy spends all his spare time fooling with it. Right now, we find him in his study, listening intently to the police calls.
Hope this is a good one.
Repeat on broadcast number 274. All cars be on the lookout for two men in green sedan wanted in holdup.
Clear as a bell.
Number one is described as 5'10", clean-shaven, wearing dark sweater and dark pants, carrying a blue steel revolver. No description on number two. These same men just held up a pedestrian in the vicinity of Clump and Turnbull, were last seen heading south on Market.
That's only a block away from here.
Additional information on number one. This man has a scar on his left cheek and speaks in a very high voice. That is all.
Oh, I'd like to get my hands on those ruffians for 5 minutes. Why, I'd tear them apart.
Stick them up.
Oh, don't shoot, please.
Did I scare you, Daddy?
Snooks, what are you doing out of bed at this time of night?
I had to get up.
What for?
The lamp fell down and got broke.
Oh, it did. How did that happen?
It happened when I was quietly pushing it off the table with my nose.
Now, what kind of insanity is that? Why should you push a lamp off the table with your nose?
I was playing Pinocchio.
Do you mean to tell me you haven't been sleeping all this time?
I was asleep, but my nose was awake.
Well, I'll wake up something else if you don't go right to bed.
I'm afraid to sleep in the dark, Daddy.
Oh, nonsense. Am I afraid to sleep in the dark?
No.
Well?
But you got Mummy to look after you.
Never mind that. You go back to your room.
All right. Daddy.
What is it?
When I get married, can I sleep with the light on?
No.
Why?
Because only owls sleep in the light.
Then I'm going to marry an owl.
All right, marry an owl.
What if he lays an egg in my bed?
Oh, stop that silly talk and go to sleep. It's after 1 o'clock in the morning.
No, it ain't.
It is, too. You think I'd lie to you?
Uh-huh.
What?
Let me see your watch.
No. If I tell you it's 1 o'clock, it's 1 o'clock.
The time is now 9:15 p.m.
Who said that, Daddy?
Oh, that's on the shortwave set. Uh-huh. He means Eastern time. He's broadcasting from New York.
JFTR, Los Angeles Police.
Guess my watch is a little fast. But it's way past your bedtime, anyhow.
Well, why don't you go to bed?
I'm listening to the police calls.
What's police calls?
Police calls are just... Oh, wait a minute. Here's one.
Car 32, in front of the Market at 10th and Main. See the woman. That is all.
Are you going to see her, Daddy?
No, that's for the police. They have to see her.
Why?
I don't know.
Is she pretty?
It doesn't make any difference to the police whether she's pretty or not.
Don't it?
No.
Why?
Because they have a job to do. The announcer calls for car 32 to carry out an assignment, and they do it, that's all.
How do they know about it?
They hear it over the shortwave radio like I do.
How do we hear it, Daddy?
Through the radio.
What's radio?
It's exactly like the telephone, only it's different.
Why?
Because there are no wires. The police broadcaster is 15 miles away from the radio car, but they can still hear him.
Does he holler?
Nobody hollers!
You do.
That's because you make me. Now look, if you don't interrupt, I'll give you a very simple illustration of the difference between radio and the telephone. To begin with, suppose you had a dog 15 miles long.
Huh?
Suppose you had a dog 15 miles long.
Where would we keep him?
He's not a real dog.
I want a dog, Daddy.
Do you want me to explain this or not?
Want.
All right. Suppose you had a dog 15 miles long. One end of it's in the broadcasting station, and the other end is in the car.
Which end?
Any end you like.
Oh, then let's put it in the rumble seat.
All right, one end of the dog is in the rumble seat.
Where's the middle?
The middle is stretched over 15 miles.
Don't it hurt him?
I told you this is an imaginary dog. So one end is in the station, the other end's in the car. Now, if you kick him at one end, he barks the other. Comprehend?
Copperhead.
Well, what do I mean?
If you kick him in the rumble seat, he barks in the station.
Right. That would be the telephone.
Well, what's radio?
The same thing without the dog. Good night, you're going to bed.
Good night, no I ain't.
Now listen, Snooks, I'm warning you.
Shh. Car 11A in 22's district. Investigate a shooting at the Elite Ballroom at 4th and Hedge. They're holding a suspect. This man might be the same one who robbed the grocery store earlier this evening. He's also wanted for forgery, possible hit and run, arson, grand larceny, and murder.
Is that all?
That is all.
Hey, you see the kind of people roaming around, Snooks? Now you get in bed where you'll be safe.
All right, Daddy.
Car 14, at the rear of 166 North Clump, a prowler. That is all.
That's our house, Daddy.
Yes, so it is. Well, maybe you'd like to stay up a little longer, Snooks.
No, I want to go to bed, Dad.
Okay. On the way to your room, have a look if that back door's locked.
It ain't on my way to my room.
Well, you can stop off in the kitchen to have a drink, can't you?
I ain't thirsty. Good night.
Well, good night. Kid's scared of her own shadow. I wasn't so comfortable, I'd go see for myself.
All cars, attention. Two hold-up men in the green sedan have been seen again at North Clump.
What are they hanging around here for?
A man with a high voice is very dangerous. Shoot on sight, that is all.
Must be a pretty tough egg if they do that.
Stick him up.
Oh, don't shoot, I'm a poor man.
It's me again, Daddy.
You little devil. I ought to give you a sound thrashing. Now go right to bed before I do.
Good night.
Kid's positively fiendish. Wait till I get hold of her in the morning. I'll...
Stick him up.
Snooks, I've warned you.
Stick him up.
Oh, you can't scare me anymore. And if you don't go to bed before I count three, I'll give you a spanking. You hear me, Snooks?
This ain't Snooks, and reach for the sky.
Oh, this is going too far. Oh! It's the high voice burglar.
Yeah.
Don't you, please. Take anything you want.
Who's there?
Don't squeal.
It's nobody, officer.
Officer?
Yes, there's a cop upstairs. I had him come in to look at the gas meter.
Are you sure it's a cop?
Why, of course. But if you leave, I won't turn you in.
A
cop, eh? Why, I ought to blow
you.
Oh,
no, please don't.
Open in the name of the law.
Holy smoke. They're outside. I'm going.
After him, Sweeney, through the front.
Oh.
Daddy, what happened?
Huh? Nothing. Terrible burglar came in, but I got rid of him.
Did you?
Why, certainly. I wasn't going to let that big bruiser frighten me. I took his revolver out of his hand and threw it at him.
You're wonderful, Dad.
Then I pitched him out through the window. Luckily, the cops were outside and they caught him. Good thing I was awake when he came in, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Well, come out from under the sofa and let's go to bed.
Huh? Oh, how did I get under here?
I know.
Oh, mind your own business. Good night.
Good night, Daddy.
One of the newest songs that lends itself to a style of orchestration Meredith created, which he calls Chiffon Swing. It's a delightful bit entitled In an Old Dutch Garden.
In an old Dutch garden by an old Dutch mill, where the moon was bright upon a distant hill, when the smile danced by, it was then that I saw heaven in a pair of wooden shoes. In an old Dutch garden where the tulips grow, that's where I first whispered that I love you so. For my heart was blue, till I gave it to an angel in a pair of wooden shoes. Then one sad day, when summer meets September, I sailed away from a thrill I will remember. In an old
old Dutch garden by an old Dutch mill. Every day I pray that you are waiting still, for my heart will yearn until I return to heaven in a pair of wooden shoes.
Good, Meredith. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet a fellow with a rather curious nickname. Have you ever noticed that nicknames don't always fit the people they're given to? For instance, lazy fellows are called Lightning. Sometimes a quiet fellow is called Gabby. I don't have to tell you that Meredith Wilson is known to his intimates as Baldy. Isn't that right, Meredith?
Fiddle faddle.
Well, it's true. We've got a fellow on this program. He's our director. His name is Don Cope. And he's about the tallest fellow I ever saw outside of a circus. Come on, Don, stand up, will you? Come on. And around here, they call him Shorty. Well, anyhow, that's the way it goes. So if it gives you any insight into his character, let me tell you that Raymond Walburn is known as the Deacon. Hello, Deacon. How are you?
Hello, Eddie. Hello, 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 Eddie. I've got a taxi waiting. Have you got two tens for a five?
Two tens? Now, wait a minute, Deacon. Wait a minute. None of that sharp stuff around here.
Oh, I think I can oblige.
Ah, manna from heaven. Well, how are you, son?
Well, I'm okay. Here's your two tens.
Well, thanks. And here's your five. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm... Oh, driver, where is that confounded job?
I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes.
Hey, hold on, Mr. Walburn. There's some mistake here.
The boy's as sharp as a tack. What is it, sonny?
Well, I think you've made an oversight, Mr. Walburn.
Is that possible?
Unintentional, of course.
Unintentional, like building Boulder Dam, huh?
Watch your language, Edward. Watch your language.
Well, Mr. Walburn, as near as I can figure it, you gave me a $5 bill and I gave you two tens.
Well, bless my soul, I believe you're right. Well, by George, you know, I like a man that keeps his eyes open.
Well, that's me, all right. I always count my change as soon as I leave the window. I find plenty of mistakes, too. Only trouble is it's generally too late to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Some of those fellas are pretty tough to catch. I went to a circus once, but that's another story.
Quite right, my boy. Quite right. Now let's straighten out our little misunderstanding.
Oh, sure. I guess you must have been feeling absent-minded.
Yes. Now, here's your five, and you give me back my two tens.
Right.
Oh, thank you. Ah! Oh, here's my driver.
Still don't seem quite right. I had $55 when I came here. Now I'm standing around my back.
Hey, any of you guys seen a guy with a mustache? Where's that muzzler with the mustache? Ah, there he is. Where's the rest of my dough, Jack?
Oh, yes, of course. Now, let me see. I gave you half a dollar, didn't I?
Yeah, and it's a phony.
Well, what do you mean?
What I mean, it's a lead half. It don't ring.
Don't ring? Oh. What do you want for 50 cents? Is that a chime?
Now, look, wise guy, I won a buck and a half. Now, come on, get it up.
Now, don't be touchy. Don't. Here's your money, and you might give me back that other half dollar.
Yeah, you might be needing it again, huh? What'll I do with the two blondes you left in the cab?
Blondes?
My niece, Edwards. My nieces. Oh, my nieces. Oh, driver, yeah? take them back to the Gaiety Theater and let them out of the stage entrance.
You mean pour them out? Well, so long, lovey.
A very disagreeable cab driver. Most unfortunate that I was unable to use my own car today.
Deacon, don't tell me you have only one car.
Retrenching, Edward. New Year's resolution, you know. I divide the car up among the family. Monday, my wife drives it. Tuesday, my brother-in-law has it. And Wednesday is my day.
And who's got it now?
The finance company. I think I'll resign from that organization.
Resign?
Yes. They're a very stubborn outfit. And besides, their offices are too far from the house.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Well, I can't send my maid all the way down there just to use a washing machine.
Listen, Deacon, do you buy everything on the installment plan?
I pay cash for breakfast, Eddie.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, Edward, that installment business is very troublesome.
Deacon, we've been drinking through the same straw.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Why, I bought a radio on the installment plan, and I'm so far behind in my payments, I won't get the Rose Bowl game until March.
You won't? Well, now, here's a proposition, my boy. I'll give you Tennessee and 6 points. How about it?
Well, that sounds good to me, Mr. Walburn. But to tell you the plain varnished truth, Peggy, that's Mrs. Wilson, she don't allow me to gamble.
Say, Meredith, do you consider that a gamble? The man's giving you 6 points.
Well, I don't know. I have a very unhealthy respect for the Trojans.
Oh, Edward, would you give me 5 minutes alone with this C-H-U-M-P?
Champ? Why should he call me champ?
I'm not moving off this spot, Deacon. Somebody's got to protect the sheep.
Now, listen, Edward. If you keep your trap shut, I'll buy a copy of your autobiography.
Well, every man has his price.
I see. My dear Mr. Williams.
You always get my name wrong, Mr. Walburn. Wilson, two L's.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Mr. Elson. How would you like to triple your money in the next 5 days?
Well, fine. Is it a conservative investment?
Conservative? Why, it's as safe as an acorn in a squirrel's pantry.
Well... That sounds good. Was it a lumber enterprise, Mr. Walburn?
Well, it's along those lines. I can see at a glance that you have a very good head for lumber.
Well, thanks. But I don't really think I can go into the lumber game at this time.
Well, now, it's not exactly lumber business. How would you...
Oh, I can't stand this, Deacon. Oil grow. Why don't you sell the poor boy a banana mine?
Give me time, Edward. Give me time.
Well, I know he's only fooling, Eddie. Any sap knows that oil comes out of cans.
Well, there's one thing sure. It don't come off trees.
Well, evidently, neither of you have heard of castor oil.
Well, I'll be fangoozled. He's positively right. Just goes to show you can miss an opportunity when you think you're too smart.
That's right, my boy. That's right. Now, would you care to invest in my proposition?
No.
That doesn't give you much leeway, Deacon.
There's more than one way to skin a cat. What is your reason, Mr. Wilkins?
Well, Peggy, that's Mrs. Wilkins. She doesn't...
Now the poor fellow's forgotten his own name.
Pardon. As I was saying, Mrs. Wilson is still a little peeved about that gold mine you sold me the last time you were here.
Did I sell you a gold mine?
You sure did. The Spurious Gold Mine Incorporated.
I let you in on that?
Yes. I was very grateful myself, but Mrs. Wilson seemed to think there might not be any gold in the mine at all. She's a kind of a doubting tomboy, you might say.
Yes, a doubting tomboy. Yes, I know the type very well. Yes.
But I had faith in it, Mr. Walburn. Even though I didn't receive any dividends for 3 weeks, I wasn't worried.
No, you kept cool and collected.
I kept cool, but I didn't collect. Then Mrs. Wilson made me go and look up the address on the stock certificate.
You went down to that address?
I certainly did.
I think my car's outside, Eddie.
Now, wait a minute, Deacon. Meredith, did you find any gold in that place?
Well, I didn't have a chance to look the mine over thoroughly. It turned out to be a lady's Turkish bath.
Well, my car is definitely outside at the door. I hear it knocking. I'll see you later, fellas.
What a swindler. Say, Warren. Has anybody seen Warren Hull around here lately?
Here he comes, Eddie. Loaded down with a tray full of cups and a steaming pot of Maxwell House coffee.
Well, right this way, my friend. You know, Warren, when that wonderful fragrance of Maxwell House coffee fills the air, I can't hold out very long.
Well, I'm all ready for you, Eddie. Here's your cup. And yours, Connie. Yours, Hanley. Cream? Sugar? And friends, wherever you are, all over America, we wish every one of you were here with us right now for this friendly custom of ours. A moment of relaxation with the coffee that's good to the last drop. But even if you can't be here in person, you can in spirit. All you need is a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee and the music of Meredith Wilson. We pause briefly for station identification.
Edward Arnold again, and we continue our Good News Maxwell House program as Meredith Wilson presents one of the most colorful songs of yesteryear. It was written by Gustav Henschen under the pen name of Paul Dupont, a number I'm sure you didn't expect to hear. La Rosita. Meredith?
Thank you.
Millions of newspaper readers have been amused and entertained by Damon Runyon's famous characters, Joe and Ethel Turp, as they appear in his syndicated column, The Brighter Side. In a series of unique and original letters, Damon Runyon, in his own clever style, reveals the philosophies and antics of Joe and his unpredictable wife, Ethel. Recently, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer completed a picture starring Ann Southern and William Gargan, based on these famous characters, and which is currently being shown at your favorite theater, entitled Joe and Ethel Turp Call on the President. Tonight, Maxwell House brings you these two unusual Brooklynites in an original sketch by Damon Runyon and adapted for radio by Brian J. Byrne, with Ann Southern playing the part of Ethel and William Gargan as Joe. There goes the mailman's whistles, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a letter from Joe Turp.
Dear Mr. Runyon, the other night I could not get home for dinner, so I headed downtown. And I telephoned my wife Ethel to meet me at the movies. When I got there, she was standing in the lobby of the theater, and three guys were standing around her. One of these here guys was dressed like a general, only with his hat off, and he turned out to be an usher. The other guy was the manager of the theater, and the third one was a guy that was built like Tony Galletto. And it was all having an argument. And I see that my wife Ethel was into it, so I walks up to her and I says, "Hello, baby, what's going on here?" And she turns around to me and she says,
"Oh, Joe, I'm so glad you came. I've been insulted."
"What? Who insulted you, baby?"
"Now, wait a minute, lady.
This here happens to be my husband, Joe, and he's talking to me, not to you, mister."
"But, lady,
Go ahead, honey, spill it. If somebody's going around insulting my wife, I want to know it. Now, what happened?"
"Well, Joe, I was sitting inside the picture show in front of this big lummox here, and he hit me on the shoulder."
"He did?"
"Now, wait a minute, lady."
"Go ahead, baby. I'm listening to you. You say this here guy took a punch at you?"
"He hit me right on the shoulder, Joe. And he says, real rough-like, 'Take off that hat.' I was so mad, but I just said, real ladylike, 'You mind your own business.'"
"That's all you said? Huh.
You don't need to hum me, mister. I guess you won't be so fresh to a lady now that my husband Joe is here."
"Go ahead, Ethel, baby. Tell me what happened."
"Well, Joe, one word led to another. Then this here usher came down the aisle."
"I had to, lady. You were all talking so loud the people couldn't hear the picture."
"I'm listening to my wife, fella, if you don't mind." "Go ahead, sweet."
"So before I could tell this here usher that this here big lummox insulted me, why, he starts yelling for the manager. So the usher got the manager. And what do you suppose he said to me, Joe?"
"Now, lady, I only said..."
"Butt out, mister. Just because you got a boiled shirt and a wedding suit on, you can't scare me. I'm talking to my husband."
"Go ahead, baby. What did this manager say to you?"
"I just said she'd have to take her hat off or I'd give her our money back."
"Why? That was just like putting me out of the theater. Imagine me, your wife, Joe, being put out of a dump like this."
"This ain't no dump, lady. This here is a first-class theater."
"If it was a first-class theater, you wouldn't have people like this big lummox hitting women on the shoulder and yelling at them to take their hats off."
"Madam, I didn't shout at you. I just said, would you please take off your hat or scrunch down a bit so I could see something."
"Joe, you can see for yourself that his voice is very insulting."
"Let's take this out on the street, folks. My patrons inside can hear the argument."
"All right, buddy, that suits us. Come on, baby."
"I paid my good money to see that picture. How could I see it with that ice cream freezer she's got on her head stuck up in front of me?"
"Now, that goes to show what an ignorant man you are to call my hat an ice cream freezer."
"Ethel, baby, what is it anyway? I ain't never seen that hat before."
"Why, Joe, this is my new hat. It's a salad bowl. And it cost me $5 to have Patsy Moore copy it from a picture in Harper's Bazaar."
"Five pieces of lettuce for that?"
"But, Joe, it's the latest thing out. Anyway, that's no reason why this big lummox should have insulted me."
"Madam, all I said was, please remove your hat or scrunch down a bit. That's all I says, and I was not insulting. I was very polite."
"That's right, mister. I heard it all."
"Well, this is a fine how do you do. Everybody around here seems to be trying to make me out a liar. Joe, are you going to stand there and let them make me out a liar and not do anything about it? I told this big lummox you'd take care of him, and you will, won't you, Joe?"
Now, wait a minute, Ethel. That hat you're wearing is pretty tall, and maybe I'd ask you to take it off, too, if I was sitting behind you in front of a pitcher."
"Oh, Joe, you're taking other people's part against me."
"No, I ain't, baby. I just said the hat's pretty tall."
"Now, why don't you folks all shake hands and be good friends?"
"What? Me be friends with a man that calls my hat an ice cream freezer? Joe, don't you dare shake hands with these here people."
"Well, what I want to know, Ethel, baby, is why couldn't you have taken your hat off?"
"She didn't even have to take her hat off, mister. All she had to do was scrunch down a bit and everything would have been all right. But she said she wouldn't scrunch down even for the president."
"Well, of course, I didn't really mean that. I certainly would have scrunched down for the president. But I bet he'd have asked me like a gentleman.
Baby, that is a pretty tall hat for anybody sitting behind you to see over.
But, Joe, this is my new hat, and it's the latest thing. It's a salad bowl, and nobody else in Brooklyn has one.
Ethel, sweets, I don't care what kind of a bowl it is. And if every skull in Brooklyn is trying to balance one of them, it's a pretty tall skimmer.
Joe, you don't like my hat.
Well, that ain't it, honey pie. I just wonder where you dig them up. The last time it was a flower pot. And the time before that it was a pillbox.
Oh, no, Joe, you're wrong. The last one was a Watteau sailor.
Well, it could have been a Greek marine so far as I'm concerned.
Mister, I'm half nuts from the hats that come into my theater and cause trouble like this one your wife's got on.
Oh, I wish I was dead. So nobody could insult me.
Oh, Ethel, baby, don't cry. Now, you see what you've done?
I ain't done nothing to nobody.
Well, how about apologizing for insulting my wife, Ethel, here? We'll call the whole thing off.
I didn't insult anybody. All I said to your wife was, madam, please remove your hat or scrunch down a bit. So I don't see why I should apologize to anybody.
Oh, a tough guy, hey?
Well, no, I don't claim to be no tough guy, but if anybody wants to make anything out of anything, they can.
Well, buddy, when it comes to talking about hats, I don't like that dicer you got on. It reminds me of one I saw a bum wearing the other day. I'll go further and say nothing but a bum would go around insulting ladies about their hats and making them cry.
Who you calling a bum?
I ain't looking through you, buddy. I'm looking right at you.
Well, I guess you're looking for it, mister.
Ow!
Knock him down, Joe. Knock him down.
Now, listen here, fellas. You're not going to get any place fighting.
Here's another from me to you, brother.
Ow!
Joe! Why, he hit you right in the nose.
Don't worry, baby. I'm just starting. Ow!
You ain't starting, mister. You're finished.
Get up, Joe. Get up. You'll ruin your suit.
What's going on here? Hey, what's this all about?
Officer, stop this. These guys are ruining my business.
All right, now, wait a minute. Hey, you. Are you going to get off of that sidewalk, or do you want me to bring you a pillow?
Well, all I can say, officer, is you just come in time. In another minute, I'd have brained this boob.
Yeah, I guess you were doing all right down there. Now, wasn't you, eh? Now, come on, you guys. What's this thing all about?
Well, I'll tell you, officer. It's about my wife's hat. This here
guy... Your wife's hat? Is this your wife right there?
Yeah, that's Ethel, my wife.
And that's the hat you're fighting about? Well, I tell you, fellas, it ain't worth it. Now, come on, go home. Get out of here, all of you. Go on, get home.
Okay, copper, don't push.
Yeah,
don't
come
push.
On, don't push if I like.
This is a fine way to treat a man who's defending his wife's honor.
Come on, now, bust it up, folks. The fight's over. Get out of here. Go on, get out of here. Come on, go on.
Ethel, honey, it's a good thing that cop came along or I'd have killed that guy.
You would, Joe? But how could you have done that laying there flat in your back?
Oh, I was just stalling, looking the situation over, that's all.
Gee, Joe, I wonder what the situation looked like from where you was. It sure looked funny from where I was.
Now, wait a minute, honey. If we're going to talk about anything funny, let's get back to that hat of yours.
Oh, Joe, I bet you don't like my hat. And it's a brand new salad bowl. I bought it just for you.
Well, I never did like salad. From now on, I won't even like the bowl. Well, just tell me one thing. If you didn't want to take your hat off, what was the harm in scrunching down like the big fella asked you
to? Oh, Joe, you silly. Don't you know why I didn't scrunch down?
No, Ethel, baby, but I'd sure like to know.
Why, Joe, if I'd have scrunched down, nobody could have seen my new hat.
Yours truly, Joe Turk.
A grand letter from Joe Turp, a grand performance from Ann Southern and Bill Gogg.
Oh, thank you, Eddie.
You didn't realize I could impersonate such a rowdy type, did you, Edward?
No, you didn't surprise me, Bill. But I must say, I think it's marvelous the way a delicate creature like Ann can throw herself into such a pugnacious role. How do you do it, Ann?
Oh, Ethel's such a real character, Eddie. She's such a genuine person, it wasn't difficult at all.
Well, believe me, I'm going to rush right over after the broadcast and see the picture. I don't know any two stars who could play the parts better than you and Bill.
Oh, thank you.
I think you're right at that, eh?
You'll have to cool him off again. Where's that magical Boswell girl?
She's right here, and she's ready to soothe the savage Turp.
Come on, Bill, scrunch down.
And the song is Speaking of Heaven. Connie?
Speaking of heaven, once I found an angel. Speaking of angels, darling, how are you? Speaking of heaven, mind if I caress you? Talk about starlight, your eyes twinkle too. You smile and I can see sunbeams. You cry and dewdrops turn to tears. You smile, and though it is cloudy, a beautiful rainbow appears. Speaking of rainbows, they're so close to heaven. Speaking of heaven, I'll stay close to you. Speaking of heaven, once I found an angel. Speaking of angels, darling, how are you? Speaking of heaven, mind if I caress you,
little white
light will lead you to my. Talk about starlight, your eyes twinkle too.
My blue heaven,
you smile and I can see sunbeams. You cry and dewdrops turn to tears. You smile, and though it is cloudy, a beautiful rainbow appears. Speaking of rainbows, they're so close to heaven. Speaking of heaven, I'll stay close to you.
In my blue heaven.
Speaking of heaven, I will stay close to you.
Very beautiful, Connie.
Daddy.
What is it, Snooks?
I want to sing a song.
Oh, don't be silly. After Connie Boswell, there's nobody in the world would want to hear you.
Yes, there is.
Who?
Me.
Well, I'm glad you like it, but you can't sing tonight.
Why?
Because you can't.
If you don't want me to sing, I'll...
You'll what?
I'll just shut myself in an ice box and I'll freeze to death.
Snooks, you're looking for a spanking.
Oh, don't spank the kid, Daddy.
Oh, Bill Gargan. Oh, I don't know what to do with her. She drives me crazy.
Let me talk to her. Hello, Snooks.
Hello.
Would you like to hear a riddle?
What's a riddle?
Like, what's the difference between a jeweler and a jailer? A jailer sells watches, and a jeweler watches sells.
That's a riddle?
Yes.
I don't like them. Stuck them, Daddy.
Now, you behave yourself.
Wait a minute. Here's a good riddle. Listen, Snooks. It's not my sister, it's not my brother, but still it's a child of my father and mother. Who is it? Do you know the answer?
Uh-huh.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Well, who is it?
don't know.
It's me.
Why?
Oh, don't you see, Snooks? It's not his sister, it's not his brother, but still it's a child of his father and mother. Naturally, it's him.
Oh. I want to do it.
Okay. Here comes Ann Southern. Try it on her.
All right. Do you like riddles, Mrs. Southern?
I love them, Snooks.
Well, it ain't Mr. Goggins' sister. It ain't...
No, no, your sister.
I ain't got one.
It doesn't make any difference. It's just a riddle. Go ahead.
All right. It ain't my sister.
It's not my brother.
It ain't my sister. It ain't my brother. It ain't my father. It ain't my mother.
Wait a minute. Get it right. It's not my sister, it's not my brother, but still it's a child of my father and mother. Got it?
Got it. It ain't my sister, it ain't my brother, but still it's a child of my father and mother.
Thank you.
Who am I?
No, no, no. Not who am I, who is it?
I mean, who is it?
Why, that's easy, Snooks. It's you.
No, it ain't. It's him.
Well, what's the use? Let's all get out of here.
Just a minute, Daddy. Daddy, I'd like a word with Snooks.
Okay, take her at your own risk.
All right. Snooks.
Yes, Mr. Howell.
I've got a letter here, and it mentions you.
I ain't done nothing.
No, 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 no. Snooks, this letter is from one of our listeners.
Oh.
He writes, because my wife believes Fanny Bryce in the role of Baby Snooks to be the most entertaining sketch on the radio, we felt honor-bound to try Maxwell House coffee. Although I have been a coffee drinker all my life, I have always been indifferent as to brand. But since trying Maxwell House, I have changed from a coffee drinker to a coffee lover. This letter is unsolicited and inspired entirely by a sense of obligation toward a grand product that deserves support. Signed, Lewis T. Apple, Huntley Village, Kirkwood, Missouri.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Apple.
And our thanks, too, Mr. Apple. We're glad, Mr. Apple, that you've discovered the coffee that has been the favorite of thousands of men all over America for more than 50 years. And friends, there are two very good reasons why today Maxwell House is making and holding more new friends than ever before in its history. You see, first, we found a way to blend Maxwell House to a new perfection of flavor, a full-bodied, mellow flavor that comes from a very special kind of coffee, choice Highland-grown coffees with a rare goodness unlike any other coffees in the world. And then to bring out the true natural goodness of this matchless new blend, we've developed the uniform radiant roast process, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. No chance this way of weak coffee from under-roasting or bitter coffee from parched coffee beans. Yes, today you'll find a lot of extra pleasure and satisfaction packed into every familiar blue Maxwell House can. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House coffee lately, ask for a pound tomorrow, won't you? Let your husband compare it with what he now thinks is good coffee. I'll wager he'll say something like this.
Why, darling, you've made a real discovery. This Maxwell House is the best coffee I ever tasted.
For the past 10 weeks, Meredith Wilson has introduced fine new compositions in the concert hall. And tonight, as we close the first concert hall series, Meredith hopes we have helped in some way to add to the lasting treasure of the world's music. Tonight we present the 10th new American composition, the world premiere of an American concert march, written especially for this series by Ferdy Groffet, composer of the well-loved Grand Canyon and Rocky Mountain suites. All right, Meredith, Ferdy Groffet's American concert march.
Thank you.
stirring murder. My compliments to you and to Ferdy Groffé, composer of the American Concert March. And tonight, the last night of the first concert hall series, Meredith and I would like to express our gratitude to all fine American composers who have taken part so willingly and so ably in our musical experiment. Peter DeRose, Sigmund Rumberg, Duke Ellington, Louis Alter, Dana Suisse, Vernon Duke, Morton Gould, Harry Warren, Harold Arlen, and Ferdy Groffé. We hope that the judgment of succeeding generations will prove this experiment to be a success. And now, until next week, when we promise you a real treat, this is Edward Arnold saying goodnight for Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks and Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Ann Southern, William Gargan, Connie Boswell, Raymond Walburn, and Meredith Wilson. See you next week.
This is Warren Hull reminding you that Roaster Fresh Maxwell House coffee comes in both 1 and 2 pound super vacuum cans, and that if you use lots of coffee, you'll find extra economy and convenience in the 2 pound size. And now, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
Ann Southern appeared through the courtesy of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios and is soon to be seen in Congo Maisie. The selection piece making is from Swingin' the Dream. This is the National Broadcasting Company.